Good morning again. My name is Sheila Feinberg. Thank you for the introduction. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about smoke-free housing, but more importantly, about how we worked with some of our partners to help us with smoke-free housing. But before I get to the main show, I have this disclosure. I have no financial relationships or commercial interests relevant to this presentation. So the overview for today, for the next 15 to 20 minutes, I'm going to talk a little bit about the Coalition for a Smoke-Free City and about smoke-free housing work that we're already doing, and then some of the work that we're doing with our partners, the Community Service Society and Asian Americans for Equality. And they're actually co-authors of this presentation, but unfortunately could not make it. So about the Coalition, we are a health advocacy group. We promote a tobacco-free New York City. We like to think of ourselves as providing a strong and loud voice, a big voice against big tobacco. We receive state and federal funding, thank you. And we also are able to award grants to community-based organizations. And finally, we are a program of Public Health Solutions, a large nonprofit based in New York City. So the Coalition for a Smoke-Free City works in three main policy areas. One is to increase smoke-free environments to reduce exposure to secondhand smoke, reducing youth exposure to tobacco marketing at the point of sale, and then finally, and what I'm going to be focusing on today, encouraging voluntary adoption of smoke-free building policies. So one of the things that we're able to do at the Coalition through some of our funding is to create original content and to generate earned media. So as you can see, we created an infographic to first explain the reason and rationale, which I won't go into because we've already heard of that well, but just, you know, pictorially, this is what we hand out to folks so that they can see why we should go smoke-free, because then tight. So that's the materials. Then we also are working with and meeting with a lot of key stakeholders, including elected officials, community boards, Rotary clubs, community-based organizations and that are in their partner networks. And then finally, what we're able to do around awareness, at least, is organizing borough-specific and citywide smoke-free housing events. And all of those events help us to generate earned media. And so to do that, we write letters to the editor and opinion editorial pieces as well. We also do a lot with social media, and I invite you to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, etc. So smoke-free housing activities. So for the voluntary policies, we work with our existing partners to go smoke-free, similar to outdoor air policies that are also voluntary. We also engage new partners, both nonprofit and private housing providers. We also are engaging and educating around secondhand smoke. We've worked a lot with landlords and residents and some tenant organizations, which again, I'm going to get into a little bit more detail. And then we've also been able to translate our materials into English and Spanish. We're working on other languages as well. We know there's many more languages spoken in New York City and throughout the world. And then we also do technical assistance forums, and those have been mostly for housing providers. And to date, we have had three of those with over 150 attendees. And in red, let me not forget, the Coalition's efforts have already resulted in over 2,500 smoke-free units. So with all that great work, we noticed that there was still a gap. We were still missing some vital, we weren't reaching some vital audiences. And so we decided to be proactive in our approach to reach out to both landlords and tenants. The technical assistance sessions I just mentioned, those were geared mostly to the landlords and the housing providers. But we realized that we need to reach out to tenants. So we worked with community-oriented and community-based nonprofit housing providers to help build momentum, not only to build momentum, but also to educate. So with our resources, we would help to advance smoke-free housing. What resources would help to advance smoke-free housing beyond building-by-building approach, which takes a lot of work and a long time. So where are they? Oh, I just had them. I actually brought some extra copies for folks. But these are the two reports I'm going to talk about. Smoke-free housing, it's a guide for residents in New York City, and then also Making Room to Breathe. So they're also there. So we worked with the Community Service Society in particular for the guide for residents of New York City. And then we worked with the Asian Americans for Equality to work with tenants to take two buildings smoke-free. So for Community Service Society report, the smoke-free housing guide for residents of New York City. So the need, we had to demonstrate the need. Smoke-free housing initiatives typically geared to landlords, you know, it's very little information for residents and tenant organizations and a whole lot of misinformation floating around. And that is true, and I'm sure we all experience that to some level in all of our communities. For example, the first thing people say is, you can't tell me not to smoke in my home, and how dare you? And we're like, no, it's not that bad. Then there's the goal. We want to empower New York City residents with the information and resources to create healthier homes by making them free of secondhand smoke. So this is a slide that maybe some of you have seen before in terms of this infographic on the right. So we want to, again, demonstrate why it's important to go smoke-free. So here are the effects on your health. Inhaling secondhand smoke increases the risk of heart disease, heart attack, and lung cancer. Kids who inhale secondhand smoke are more likely to suffer from ear and lung infections. For example, effects on your home. Secondhand smoke travels easily through cracks and floorboards, and we just saw that in your presentation, the particulate matter in particular. Chemicals from secondhand smoke seep into surfaces and are difficult to remove, and air purifiers are not sufficient to remove secondhand smoke. Protecting your family. Voluntary, eliminating all indoor smoke is the best way to keep your family safe from the dangers associated with cigarette smoke. Voluntary smoke-free housing policies means every resident agrees not to smoke in their apartment. It may include info about where to smoke outside for residents who wish to continue smoking. And then we also have some short-term approaches in here. Talk to your neighbors who smoke and see if you can reach a compromise. I know that might sound silly. In New York City, that's not always the case, that you can do it, or even anywhere else. It is a hard issue to resolve, but we do think that the first step is talking to each other. Raise the issue of going smoke-free to neighbors who you think may also be supportive, and repair the obvious cracks in floorboards, walls, and doors, and be sure to replace a filter in your air conditioner. So the right to smoke-free housing. So here's just some of the, you know, often when we're talking about smoke-free housing, there is this issue of rights that comes up. And so we like to at least make available that you actually do have a right to a smoke-free home. And so here's some legislation from the New York's Clean Indoor Air Act and the New York City Smoke-Free Air Act and the Federal Fair Housing Act and for New York real property law. I don't feel like doing it. But needless to say, you do have your rights. So for renters and co-op / condo owners, renters have the right to voluntarily adopt a smoke-free policy in their own apartments at any time over the course of a lease period. If secondhand smoke is affecting your quality of life as a renter, you have the right to ask your landlord to enforce the warranty or habitability or nuisance clause in your lease. And condo and co-ops have procedures in place to amend building rules and bylaws to include smoke-free housing. And then, again, I was saying that we're engaging with tenants, so this is protections from questionable landlords, and I'm sure we all have questionable landlords where we live. So if you think your landlord is adopting an unfair policy around smoking, you should know that your landlord may not add a smoke-free policy to your lease agreement mid-contract unless you agree to the change. Your landlord may change the lease upon renewal. So these are all things that, again, landlords are not allowed to ask renters about whether or not they smoke. Landlords may only evict a tenant if they violate the terms of his or her lease. And tenants of buildings with smoke-free policies cannot be evicted simply for being smokers if they have not violated the no smoking indoors policy. So, for example, they went outside to smoke their cigarette instead of smoking inside their home. Then also working with building management. Make your arguments for smoke-free policy relevant to those in charge. Let your building owner or management know how much more expensive it is to rehabilitate residential units previously occupied by smoking tenants. And this is our chart here. We should update this at some point, but this just gives you a clear-cut example, and I think we've seen some slides similar to this already, but clearly there's a financial incentive to being smoke-free. and engaging your neighbor support. A good place to start is, as I said earlier, is by talking to your neighbors and asking building management to conduct a survey of residents regarding their opinions on secondhand smoke. So some sample questions if you wanted to. Do you allow smoking in your apartment? Have you smelled tobacco smoke in your home that is not your own? If so, are you bothered? Would you prefer that smoking be prohibited from your apartment, from the apartments? So the other considerations for residents are entryway smoking. When going smoke-free, many buildings include entryways in their adopted policies and post signs to remind residents and guests not to smoke directly in front of the building. Restaurant and bar patrons smoking beneath your window, that's been a little unintended, but still a problem that we've uncovered in New York City, that a lot of bars have this great patio space and you can't smoke inside anymore because of the Smoke-Free Air Act, so they smoke right outside underneath somebody's window. And so now the smoke is going up to somebody's apartment. So let the owner manager know how you're being impacted of the establishment, and ask if they'd be willing to talk to their patrons to step out from under your windows if they go out to smoke. So I just wanted, before I go to the next case study, I just wanted to explain that all of that information is geared for tenants, what I just read to you or was reporting to you. That's all about how do you engage tenants around smoke-free housing. And the issue for us has always been, as I said earlier, landlords. We'd always had success reaching out to landlords and having big buildings go smoke-free. But New York City has a wide variety of housing stock. We have very strong rent regulations, rent control that we have to come up against and landlords have to work with, and a lot of tenants are happily in, but also unhappily if they are adversely affected to secondhand smoke and they can't move. And so for us, it's always a health equity issue as well. And I just want to underscore that because the groups that we worked with, that was their main concern and reason for joining us in this work, because they too saw it as a health equity and social justice issue. So I just wanted to reinforce that in case that wasn't communicated yet. So the second report that we were able to collaborate with another group on, Asian Americans for Equality. They are a citywide organization, and in New York City we have not one, but almost four Chinatowns in New York City. So their work in Koreatown and a lot of other Asian communities, their work is very significant. And so we wanted to partner with them around smoke-free housing. And in particular, they also provide housing. They're also a landlord. They do affordable housing. They have affordable housing construction, building projects. So we worked with them, and this is from their report again. So this is some of the information I think you already know about in this audience. But one thing, that there is still a gap in providing smoke-free housing options to tenants and publicly subsidized housing. So for AFI, what they did, and admittedly their sample size was not huge, but still what they were able to do is they conducted two focus groups. They conducted a focus group, smoking among Asian Americans. So one thing to know is that 1 in 8 New Yorkers is Asian American. Smoking rates among the Asians have remained the same since 2002. Whereas significant reductions have occurred already citywide. And the focus group methods, there were 13 Chinese tenants from Queens, Manhattan, and Brooklyn participated. None of them were current or former smokers, and participants asked about experience with and knowledge of tobacco use. So again, admittedly, a small sample size and maybe a friendly sample size. Findings, knowledgeable about negative health impacts of cigarette smoke and secondhand smoke, acknowledgement that cigarette smoke cannot be contained, and a strong endorsement of smoke-free housing policies to protect all tenants. And I'll just read these two blurbs. I support smoke-free housing. Smoking is bad, especially since everyone in my family is asthmatic. That's from Elmhurst, Queens. I'm in support of smoke-free housing, especially for housing complexes. Secondhand smoke can travel into both the halls and vents. This is a serious health concern for residents with breathing issues. That's also from Bensonhurst. So AFI did this case study, Rivington Street, on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. There are 8 units. It was vacant at implementation. It's in the process of rent up through a housing lottery. It's very competitive in New York City for housing. The implementation applicants are informed of the smoke-free policy and other terms of lease and house rules before they sign. Smoke-free policy did not affect ability to identify and screen applicant tenants. And then their key lessons for housing providers is rent up is ideal scenario for implementing a smoke-free housing policy. So if the building's vacant, it's a lot easier to do it on the front end to have residents come in and sign a smoke-free housing policy. And then their experience has been positive. They've had positive feedback and full cooperation from tenants. And that's their building that went smoke-free on the right. So another case study in Woodhaven Boulevard, which is in South Ozone Park, Queens. Again, it's 10 units occupied at implementation. Apartments are rent stabilized. And it's just important to note that they're rent stabilized because they have different protections, legal protections, those tenants. So implementation. Under the rent stabilization terms of the lease can only be changed with a new tenant. It's important to work with tenants and communicate about the benefits of smoke-free housing policy, even smokers agreed. And key lessons for housing providers, focus on voluntary and self-enforcing policy. No smoking signs and policy reminders were in place throughout the building, and rent regulation creates unique context for voluntary smoke-free policies. And I guess unique, I could put quotes around because that could also be defined as difficult, but also a good opportunity. And again, that's the front of their building. So considerations for rent regulation. Rent stabilization was enacted in 1969 in New York State when rents were rising sharply. Today, there are approximately 1 million apartments under rent stabilization. Rent stabilized tenants are protected from sharp increases in rent and retain the right to renew their leases. And there's a lot of text here, but you can read that later. In situations of rent stabilization, property owners need to consider voluntary adoption policies. And as units turn over, smoke-free policies can be added into the lease. So again, this is from AFI. What have they learned? What have we learned? Smoke-free housing policies serve as an effective tobacco control strategy and advance the social justice aims of the tobacco control movement. The privilege of smoke-free housing must be accessible to all, including seniors, low-income families, and individuals with existing health conditions. And finally, not-for-profit affordable housing developers are uniquely positioned to lead this charge so that smoke-free housing is an available option for all New Yorkers, regardless of income. And so for AFI's key recommendations, it's feasible to implement smoke-free housing policies and affordable housing developments. Voluntary adoption policies for smoke-free housing can be developed where regulatory barriers exist, and that's important for people to remember and note. And then finally, successful implementation of smoke-free housing policies depends on meaningful communication and consensus building with tenants. And that's, I saw my slide. So that's it. I know we're going to do questions as a group later, but those are the two groups that we worked with. I do have extra copies of the report if people are interested in having them. Thank you.